Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we are. We are jammed today. It is a Wednesday. We're live in Los Angeles, and this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me today. Nick Wright in 15, 20 minutes. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am great. You know, none of us, Joy. I've got a big dilemma I'm going to talk to you about in 10 minutes, by the way. I found a dive restaurant last night. It's the best I've ever had, but I can't tell anybody because they'll fill the dive restaurant and I won't be able to get back in. More on that in a moment.
Oh.
You know how it is.
That's tough,
You tell
yeah.
everybody about your dentist. I have the best dentist. You call a year later, you can't get into the dentist because all your friends booked at the dentist. So now I found a dive restaurant, the best in L.A. I can't tell anybody.
Yeah, do you be selfish or not?
I could even help the business. I can't. It's that good.
I got to think about that.
Yeah, really. America's got a problem. One of the things I've always supported professional athletes, and I don't think we think about this all the time because we're like, well, they make a lot of money. So do doctors, so do attorneys, so do media people, so do executives, so do movie stars. A lot of people make money. Can you imagine being traded? Think about that. You go to work one day. Colin Cowherd has been traded for an overnight radio host in Des Moines, Iowa. How would I feel? I got to move my family? Oh, you make a lot of money. A lot of people make a lot of money. Wall Street, Silicon Valley, movie stars, executives, business owners. Can you imagine, literally, you live in Iowa, you got a nice family, your kids go to school, your wife's got a social network. You've been traded to Kansas City. I don't know anybody there. But we always say, well, a lot of money. Athletes make a lot of money. So that I think this is the Orlando bubble thing some of the NBA players are struggling with. I want to be with my family. I don't want to be pulled away from people I love. And I was thinking about this. Remember that Jimmy Garoppolo, Tom Brady trade rumor? Remember that? Like, Brady's going to San Francisco. Garoppolo could go to New England. We all freaked out. Well, I didn't buy into it. I thought it was the craziest thing I've ever heard. But 2 or 3 days after it didn't happen, I called the general manager. And he said, oh, yeah, it was on the table. For like 48 hours. I'm like, come on. He's like, no. It was on the table. This is a very tied in guy. He's like, listen, it was on the table for 48 hours. And just think about the sports history that could have happened that didn't. Tom Brady goes to the best young offensive mind in football, excellent O-line, best young defensive front, and the next Gronk he's gotten George Kittle. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Tom Brady would be the Super Bowl favorite this morning. I mean, it would be Mahomes and Brady meeting again. That's what it would be for the next 3 years. Nothing against Lamar, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, but it would be Mahomes and Brady. Now, it didn't happen, and it would have been amazing, and it wouldn't have been awful for Jimmy Garoppolo. He could have gone to New England. That would have been a happy ending for everybody. But it got me thinking, there's only one untradeable player in the NFL. I mean, we've seen DeAndre Hopkins just got traded. Some think he's the best receiver. Odell Beckham got traded. I mean, it's hard to find a great young left tackle. Laramie Tunzel got traded. Jalen Ramsey, the best pure corner, traded. You can trade any non-quarterback in this league. And I'd argue you can trade every quarterback in this league except one, Patrick Mahomes. If you got a call and you were Andy Reid, you'd have to say, hello, excuse me, wrong number, click. But let's talk about Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson because I know that's what you were thinking. Come on, Colin, you can't. John Schneider and Pete Carroll are two of the NFL's biggest wheeler dealers. They got to a Super Bowl when Russell Wilson made no money. Made no money. The big concern in Seattle is we're paying Russell Wilson $35 million. We can't get him players. If Baltimore called and said, we'll give you the next Russell Wilson, his salary cap hit is $2 million. And they'd save $30 million on the cap hit. You don't think Seattle would consider it? I wouldn't. Because I think Russell's the best football player in America. And I still think Lamar's got a ways to go to be as good as Russell. But if you don't think Seattle would consider it, have you watched how they've traded in the last 5 years? They traded away Max Unger. They can't get the offensive line right. You and I know. Cam Newton, backup story. Kaepernick's coming to town. You think they've treated him with respect? Now you're saying to yourself, well, Baltimore wouldn't do it. John Harbaugh's like, how many more years I got coaching on this contract? Four. I think Lamar will be good in the playoffs, but he's 0-2. I know Russell Wilson with this group of dudes. We win in the Super Bowl. I mean, let's ask yourself today. If Russell Wilson was the quarterback of Baltimore today, ask yourself, who's winning the Super Bowl? It's over. Mahomes is the only thing close to in its way. It is over. Lamar, we all like, but aren't we all acknowledging, can he take that next jump? Russell's done that, and then two other jumps above that. What about Aaron Rodgers? If Jordan Love came into this year's camp, 6'4", 225, mobile with a huge arm, that's the given, and had a great camp, did you watch the Packers draft? Did you read the ESPN article, the shots taken at Aaron? And somebody called and said, we'll give you three first-rounders, Aaron Rodgers. And I get Jordan Love and six first-rounders in the next 3 years to help him out. Green Bay doesn't have an owner. It's got a GM who's frustrated with Aaron. I watched the draft. Did you? Deshaun Watson's had two ACL tears. I'd move him. You could get me to move off Deshaun. I wouldn't love it. But if you throw up three first-round picks and I got six in the next few years, I'd consider it. Mahomes is the only guy in the NFL you hang the phone up and say, sorry, wrong number. So when I think of this Garoppolo-Brady thing, it didn't happen. It would have been fantastic in terms of interesting had it happened. But at the time, I was so outraged by it. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And then I started thinking about it, and I think, outside of Mahomes, I think every GM in the league would take the phone call for every single player. All right, so I saw this. We're going to have an NBA season. It's going to be abridged, but I'm excited for it. The league's not going to listen to Kyrie or Dwight Howard. LeBron wants to play. Giannis wants to play. Kawhi wants to play. We're going to play. LeBron wants to play. We're going to play. And we should, and it's going to be great. And if the players didn't play, it would screw with their salary cap and leverage and power for decades. Maybe not decades, but a decade. It would be terrible for the players. The owners would have all the leverage. Because they have the ability, if you don't play, to blow up the CBA and start over. It would be horrible for the players. And they've worked for a long time. LeBron's been in this league 16, 17 years. He's got power. He's got leverage. He's got everything. He didn't want the last four or five in this year playing with his son, and his son has no leverage. That's not what LeBron wants. LeBron's a giver, not just a taker. He didn't want to give his son that NBA. They're going to play. Daryl Morey's a very smart general manager for the Houston Rockets. And he's talking about Westbrook and Harden in the postseason. And here's what he said.
Basketball pressure-wise, yeah, it's a lot. Again, two of the greatest players ever on our team. We should win this thing.
All right, that's not going to happen. And there's no data that tells you they're going to win this thing. First of all, James Harden needs the whistle. He doesn't get it in the postseason because that's the postseason. And Russell Westbrook, threes become a big deal in the NBA now. Threes, he's the worst shooting three-point player in the league, 25%. There's nothing here that tells you they're going to win the championship. But let me put my tinfoil hat on. One of the things I'm proudest of as a sports talk show host is seeing things earlier than others. It's almost like I'm a music scout and I find the garage band before they become the Beatles. I like it. I liked saying 3 years ago, Russell Wilson is going to be one of the great quarterbacks ever. I liked 3 years ago saying Aaron Rodgers is declining. I liked saying Andrew Luck, freshman year at Stanford, is the next great quarterback. I liked saying 2 years ago, I saw a kid in high school, Trevor Lawrence, he's the next great thing. I'm into it. That's my thing, right? I like to do that. Let me tell you why Houston's dangerous. So we're going into an NBA season. The sport, baseball hadn't started. NFL hasn't started. College football hadn't started. This tsunami, this pandemic caught the NBA three quarters the way through the season. It's brutal. And they're going to play in empty arenas with no fans. And it's a star-driven league. And three or four or six players are going to get COVID and have to sit out games. And three or four or six players are going to get hurt because we're rushing them back to play. This could be an unrivaled mess. But there's one thing that can save this NBA season. The stars advance. Houston opens up with Denver. Houston's going to roll. because they're going to get the whistle. Colin, that is illegal. No. Not everything needs a memo. You do not tackle Drew Brees during training camp. Nobody needs a memo. You do not take a shot at Tom Brady in training camp. Nobody needs a memo. If you go out golfing with your buddies on a Saturday for 5 hours, come home at 5 at night, a little buzzed, and your wife's been with the 4 kids all day, after making dinner most of the week and working herself, Sunday's Mom's Day. You don't need a memo, fellas. There doesn't need to be a memo. You're going to have a half dozen guys get COVID, have to miss games, screw up series. You're going to have a half dozen athletes get hurt because we're rushing them back. The thing, you're not going to have any fans at these games. The thing that will ensure this works is lots of Harden and lots of Westbrook and lots of Embiid and lots of LeBron. That's not a shot at Denver. But I think in a regular season, without a pandemic, I'd take Denver in the series. I think they're going to get knocked out early against Houston. I don't think it's a tinfoil hat. I don't think you need a memo. I think there are certain things in life and in sports and in business that are completely understood. Houston is going to have a nice playoff run. Harden's going to get the whistle. Westbrook still won't hit a three, but Harden will get the whistle for maybe the only time in his career in the playoffs. Okay, coming up next, Pro Football Focus did it. They have made me a Baker Mayfield fan, and I'll explain that coming up next.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Pro Football Focus is now officially turning me into a Baker Mayfield fan. So Pro Football Focus, Chris Collinsworth owns that thing. It's a data analytical look. They grade every player. They have projections for Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow this year. And the projections are that Joe Burrow is going to throw for more yards and more touchdowns than Baker Mayfield. I cannot sit here and just let this go undiscussed. Forget the fact that Baker has better weapons, maybe a better coach, more experience, and an infinitely better offensive line. Outside of maybe safety, Cleveland's better everywhere than Cincinnati. Safety's probably the spot. But Uncle Colin, considered largely by America a sage full of wisdom, that's me, is going to make my own projections and explain them. Baker Mayfield's going to go 9-7. He's going to throw for 3,989 yards, just shy of 4,000. He's going to have 27 touchdowns, a passer rating of 94, and complete 66% of his throws. 66% is a key number. Kevin Stefanski wants ball control and running games. Baker was wildly inefficient last year. He's going to be very efficient this year. He won't be as explosive as everybody thinks. 27 touchdowns is nice. It's not 35. It's not as many as Jameis Winston have. Baker's going to have a nice year. Not an MVP year, but a very nice year. And his efficiency numbers, passer rating, and completion percentage are going to go way up. Joe Burrow is going to go 4-12. He's going to throw for 3,300 yards, 19 touchdowns, 61% completion percentage with an 82 passer rating. And before you freak out, we will say at year's end, I will say, not bad considering. Damn, he doubled the Bengal wins totals. You know what? Give him some help. We may have a Pro Bowler on our hands. The idea that a quarterback alone, Joe Burrow's hype now is it's the train is off the tracks. Average arm, bad O-line, dysfunction in the front office, worst roster easily in his division. When you look at the numbers I'm projecting, if the numbers Pro Football Focus on Baker are accurate, that he will throw for fewer touchdowns than Gardner Minshew last year, then Pro Football Focus is acknowledging they whiffed on Baker Mayfield because they loved him out of college. If Gardner Minshew has more touchdowns last year than Baker has this year with that cast in Cleveland, I think you have to consider moving off Baker Mayfield. You can't beat Lamar Jackson, Big Ben, and if Joe Burrow's better as a rookie with that cast, what are you doing with Baker Mayfield? You got to make a move. And I don't think that's what will happen. I think when the year's over, Cincinnati will realize Burrow's really talented but needs way more help, and Cleveland will realize if you give Baker the right coach in a running game, it's pretty good. You can get to the playoffs. But I cannot sit here idly without talking about this. Burrow will not have better numbers. The hype train has derailed officially, even at PFF.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Bobby Marks is a former general manager in the NBA, and he's talked about this, is the owners have a right, the league has a right. It's force majeure, I think it's what it's called, is that the NBA owners, if the players don't play and it doesn't work and they just sit out, they can just, it's over. They just blow up the contract. They start a new CBA. It would be disastrous for the players, because what the NBA players have, and I don't think the NFL players are close to this, is they have leverage in negotiations. We really like certain star players. And that has been something the NBA has worked, players union. And the last negotiations, I thought, were very formidable for the players. The last baseball negotiations, the players got taken to the bank. The owners crushed the baseball players. But in the last NBA negotiations, players did pretty well, especially star players. They make a bigger percentage of the cap. So the question becomes, if there's a short-term difficulty and short-term obstacles and short-term sadness, it depends on where you are. If you're almost out of the league, I'm a veteran, I'm 37, I may say, like, I'm not doing it. I'm not giving my family up. But if you're a younger star player, and there's plenty of them, these are really tough decisions, because one thing employees in America rarely have, it used to be in America, 70% of jobs were union jobs. Now it's 7. Okay. So very few people, just regular people, have like leverage, a union negotiating in mass in power behind them. Now, I'm not saying, you know, a typical fireman is LeBron James, but I'm saying is unions create leverage and power, and you work a long time. It's very hard to get a really good union job, you know, in America, a fireman in Los Angeles, lifeguards. The pension for a lifeguard is 6 figures. Those are gold bar jobs. You put 20 years in, you retire, you go to the beach and you make $100,000 a year going to the beach and not working. Those are great jobs. So for the NBA, you've worked so long to get, and it takes star players, and the star players, the NBA has been very fortunate. Their star players have been good guys. Michael Jordan, into Magic, into Bird, into Kobe, into Shaq, into LeBron. They've been smart. They've been business people. They've understood their leverage. They've worked for years to build it. And if you don't play, and I know it's difficult, and I know it's isolation, and I know there's concerns, but it should be noted, 0 to 17 years old in a state, California, 40 million people, nobody's died of COVID. It's that you're the safest person. Now, it could be a cousin. It could be a relative. But just things to consider here. The owners almost always have leverage because the NBA is not their only income. They got like 36 corporations. I mean, you watch Mark Cuban on Shark Tank. He buys another company every week. So it's they've always had the ability to say, just shut it down. In fact, I would make an argument. There are some medium to small market teams in baseball and the NBA that are probably rooting for a shutdown. So if you're a LeBron-level player, do you want to take the side of the small market owner who really wants leverage more than he cares about basketball? So these are tough decisions. It's not perfect for the NBA. But to me, if you blow it up and you just say, we're not going to play, wow. I don't know how you overcome that leverage loss, that power loss, that CBA loss in a decade. And the players have worked so hard to get it and so hard to maintain it. And it's these are not easy decisions, but I think we're going to have NBA.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So Byron Leftwich played in the NFL for a long time. You know, kind of a marginal quarterback. He's now into coaching. You may have heard that story a while back where Tom Brady broke into the wrong house. Didn't really break into it. He walked into the wrong house in Tampa. Byron Leftwich was the house next door. Brady walked in, got the wrong address, then walked across the street, blah, blah, blah. Leftwich was talking about Tom Brady and how he thinks the first year in Tampa will be. And one of the things he talked about that I think is really interesting, he said, I think the greatest challenge is this. He's been somewhere for 20 years. You work at the same job for 20 years, said Byron Leftwich, and you've done something for 20 years in one spot with one group, and then you're asked to change totally. He goes, it's just automatically different, and all the stuff you take for granted doesn't happen. So he goes, the communication. This is why I thought Gronk was really vital. Gronk is not about catches. Gronk's about culture. And my first year at ESPN and my first year at Fox Sports 1 were bumpy. I'm building a staff. I'm building a culture. I'm building a set. I'm building an identity. I'm working with people I've never really worked with before. They don't know how I think, how I work, how I operate. It's hard. And I'm not Tom Brady, but I brought people with me to help me. Why? So they could preach the way I see the world. That's why Gronk is not about catches. Gronk's really about culture. And what I think is fascinating for Brady here, I have lived in Tampa and I have lived near Boston. I'm not sure in America there are two fairly major cities that are more opposite. Boston is an intellectual, driven, intense political and sports hub. The Red Sox were early on analytics. The Bruins were. The Patriots were. The Celtics were. It's wildly competitive. It is academic. It's full of political and sports history. Tampa is flip-flops. Tampa is laid back. Tampa is chill with no history. Tom will be able to lighten up a little bit for Tampa. You know what I mean? Even intense guys can chill out for the weekend, go golfing in Nantucket. But can chill guy ramp it up for 4 months and be intense? And I don't know the answer there. I think it'll be easier for Tom to chill out than it will be for some of Tampa execs and players to get more intense, which is who Tom is and what he demands. Nick Wright is joining us via the Cowher Global Satellite Network. Lots to talk about. Let me start with this. Daryl Morey says we should win a title. And I said, I've never been a Westbrook Harden postseason fan, but my conspiracy theory is we're going to have players miss games for COVID, players miss games for injuries. There's an unspoken non-memo that's been passed around the league. Give stars the whistle. Keep them in the playoffs. It's the only thing that guarantees this Orlando bubble, problematic as it is, works, which is more Harden, more Westbrook, more Giannis, more Anthony, less Denver Nuggets. So I buy the Rockets a little this year. Do you think they're a championship team?
Well, listen, I think they have the second best chance of anyone in the West of winning the title, and nobody thinks that except me. I think they're a better team than the Clippers. I've watched them play the Clippers. I think they have more ways to beat you than the Clippers. And I actually think if this ends up being a second round matchup, Rockets-Clippers, that it's a really tough matchup for the Clippers because the Rockets' weakness obviously is the lack of an interior rim defender. And the Clippers' interior scorer, I think, is Ivica Zubac. So I'm not that worried about that. Now, it is true that the Rockets needed more time to gel. They made a major midseason acquisition and departure and removing Capella, bringing in Covington, and then the season stopped. So that could work against them. But what I think could work for them as far as the pause of the season, Colin, is what we've seen with Harden over the last 6 years is he has such a workload during the regular season. By the end of the regular season and into the postseason, he wears down a bit. I think it's a little overblown, but he wears down a bit. Now you've had a 3-month break, And Westbrook is there to take some of the pressure off him and take some of the not mental pressure, but physical pressure of having to be the only generator of offense. So for all those reasons, I would rank the championship contenders at Lakers 1, Bucks 2, Rockets 3. So, yeah, I think they're a contender. I don't know if I'd pick them, but if you got two of the 9 best players in basketball, you got a shot.
So you love Patrick Mahomes, and Lamar Jackson said there's no rivalry with Patrick Mahomes, which I agree. I don't see it right now. I think Lamar is really kind of in the AFC, kind of his own galaxy. But it got you thinking about quarterback rivalries this morning. I'd like you to share it with the audience.
Yeah, so I just think this is kind of something to take a page out of your book. If you want to look into the crystal ball, so to speak, what are going to be the best rivalries of the next decade in the NFL? And everyone does top fives. I prefer a top six. I think Mahomes versus Deshaun Watson, we've seen him play in the playoffs once before. Deshaun played well early. Mahomes obviously took over late. And then they're mostly interdivision. Your great friend and I believe godson Baker Mayfield against Joe Burrow in the kind of battling for the AFC North alongside Lamar. Tua versus Darnold. Tua, who I think is going to be the best of the rookie quarterbacks. Darnold, who is your other actual godson, battling for the AFC East. Russ, listen, I think Russ is older than all these guys by a while, but I think Russ is going to play the entirety of the 2020s. Kyler Murray, number one overall pick, battling for the NFC West. And then you have Dak versus Wentz in the NFC East. And, of course, Mahomes versus Lamar as a potential Brady Manning, not in the same division, but battling for the conference. Like, to me, those are the quarterback rivalries that will determine the next decade in the NFL. And I think what is maybe most noteworthy there, Colin, is you look at, wait, there is no one from, for example, the NFC North or the NFC South on those lists, meaning those are the two divisions where it's older quarterbacks or unproven quarterbacks on their way out, and you wonder if those divisions could be up for grabs over the next decade.
Shifting gears, 3 minutes left. Jimmy Garoppolo said he was unfazed by the Brady rumors. I don't know if I would have been. Do you think less of Jimmy Garoppolo for saying, yeah, I don't care, it's the NFL? Or would you like him to be outraged that the Niners did actually consider moving him for a 42-year-old Tom Brady?
Yeah, I mean, Colin, it's not that I think less of him. I just don't believe him. I mean, if the bosses at FS1 were just publicly like, listen, we seriously considered and had a lot of conversations about kicking out Colin for Costas, I think it'd bother you. And you might be like, well, yeah, listen, Costas might be the GOAT, but I think he's 70. Like, I'm in my prime still. What's going on? Like, and so I just don't believe him, Colin. It's not that I think more or less. There is Jimmy Garoppolo has to have lose sleep over the fact that the NFL version of hitting the game-winning jump shot as time expires, he had in his hand. Super Bowl, inside of 2 minutes, down less than a touchdown, player open streaking down the field, and he overthrew him by 6 yards. That's got to have kept him up all offseason. And now he finds out that his team considered strongly for multiple days, multiple meetings, moving on from him for the oldest quarterback we've seen this side of George Blanda. That would bother me. That's just me. So I don't know that I can believe Jimmy Garoppolo. It didn't bother him.
By the way, you were so succinct. I got one more with 1.5 minutes. Kyrie Irving, we want perhaps to have our own league, to which I would say league minimum's $1 million. It's not like players don't have leverage and great accommodations now. What did you make of Kyrie saying, maybe we should just form our own league?
Listen, Kyrie is a different type of cat. I think we all know that. I think Kyrie's heart is in the right place on this. I think there is a reason the more cogent quotes and thoughts on this, though, have come from Avery Bradley. I think Avery Bradley's point that, listen, raising awareness is great, but the whole reason you raise awareness is to then create action. That is the direction the NBA needs to be going. Every single owner in the league is richer than LeBron. Look at what LeBron has been able to do for his hometown of Akron. Actual boots on the ground impact in the community. NBA guys, superstars such as Kyrie, putting pressure on owners to actually try to make positive change in the inner cities of the communities where the teams are, I think is a great thing. I think the NBA guys breaking off and starting their own, you know, USFL of the NBA, I think that might be a little pie in the sky-ish. But I know everyone's kind of crushing Kyrie. I want to give Kyrie credit because I do think he helped get this conversation going to where when we're talking NBA, Colin, we were just talking COVID or we were talking about the restrictions of the bubble. And now we are talking about the issue of the moment, which is not just systemic racism, but more specifically police brutality against minority communities and the NBA trying to take a leadership role in that. But no, I don't think the NBA guys are going to break off and start their own league. I don't see that coming.
Nick Wright, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. My friend Costas is about 65, by the way. You aged him a little bit there. But, you know, your point is well taken.
Oh, my apologies. Costas inspired me to get into this business when I was 12. Told me where to go to college. I've known him forever. My apologies, Mr. Costas. But still, I'd be angry if I were you, Colin. You're still in your prime, my friend.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I want to talk about this. Bleacher Report, Mike, T-A-N-I-E-R, Tanier, has an article. He makes a very compelling point. He goes, you know, this year, we're getting to a point where everybody's going to watch Brady and Breeze. Could they set the all-time touchdown record? Could they set the all-time yardage record? We're kind of looking at them as Breeze and Brady are now battling. They're just filling up the record book. But Mike at Bleacher Report says, what's more interesting is not the old guys. And it's not even the young guys. It's the two guys in the middle in the NFL, Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. Aaron has the highest passer rating in league history. Russell's second. And if Russell and Aaron have the exact same years they did last year, they are tied at 101.8. How remarkable is that? And by the way, the difference is Aaron's numbers last 3 years are declining. Russell's are going up. Translation, they won't have the same year this year, and Russell will be ahead. And we now have consensus from other people beyond me. Russell is going to end up being the better quarterback all time than Aaron. And he's right now better than Aaron. Aaron, and he's earned it, has been riding the nostalgia train for several years. Never forget Aaron's three best passer rating years are 2011, 2012, and 2014. Folks, that is a long time ago. That is not to say Aaron didn't deserve it and hasn't earned it. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer, and for several years, you called him the GOAT. I didn't, but I got the argument based on Dan Marino-level talent. But whereas Aaron's declining and Russell is not, Russell is now younger, healthier, elevates teammates, and appears to be easier to coach. There I said it. Sorry, it feels obvious to me. There is one number with Aaron, I've never been able to get over. And Green Bay fans get really defensive about this. They put on their cheese heads and argue. When you look at great quarterbacks, John Elway was defined by fourth quarter comebacks. That was why he was better than Marino. He was better late. Tom Brady, for most of his career, was better in big games than Peyton Manning. This is not about touchdown. I mean, if I ask you Tom Brady all-time touchdown passes, hell, you don't even know. I don't know. I'm not sure Tom knows. It's not a stat sport. You got to win games. And as a quarterback, you are judged. Jimmy Garoppolo outplayed Patrick Mahomes for three quarters of the Super Bowl. We call Garoppolo a whiff because he had a bad fourth quarter. We don't care about the first three quarters. We care about the last for quarterbacks. Are you great late? That's what defined Montana. Montana wasn't the biggest. Montana didn't have the biggest stats. Montana wasn't a stat machine. Montana was great in Super Bowls, the last game of the year. There's a stat with Aaron I've never been able to get over. Fourth quarter comebacks. Russell Wilson 21, Aaron 16. And Aaron's played 46 more games. What the hell? Derek Carr's got more fourth quarter comebacks. Ryan Tannehill's got more Andy Dalton has more. Matt Ryan's got more than Aaron Rodgers. Well, it's the defense. Right, Matt Ryan's always had a great defense. Derek Carr in Oakland's had a great defense. Andy Dalton last 3 years starting had a great defense. Well, I mean, it's coaching. Well, Andy Dalton always had a great coach. Ryan Tannehill always had a great coach. Aaron's not as great late as Russell Wilson, and that's how you define him. By the way, Russell, zero losing seasons, never hurt. Aaron, both of those recently. So I think we now have a consensus for anybody that's honest. Russell's slightly better now, and after the year, it's Russell is the better quarterback. So Lamar Jackson said yesterday, he was talking about, yeah, we kind of blew it against Tennessee. You know, to be honest with you, they shocked us. We got a little ahead of ourselves. I don't think the loss by Lamar Jackson defines him or means really anything. I mean, Tom Brady got beat by Tennessee. We see this every year in the NFL playoffs. There's a team that shocks us. Philadelphia and Nick Foles. Like, how? Rams and Jared Goff. What? It happens every year. It's no big deal. You've got a surprise. Doesn't mean they get to the Super Bowl. Doesn't mean they win the Super Bowl. But there's always a surprise team. Last year it was Tennessee. I don't think it means anything Baltimore lost. Baltimore had a better season. I'd make the argument Baltimore was a better team. They just weren't a better team that Saturday. And that's okay. It happens. It's no big deal. There have been Denver teams that beat Tom Brady. I don't necessarily think they've always been better, but it's high altitude. It's at Denver. They were better in that moment. Tim Tebow at one time beat Big Ben and the Steelers. I don't think Tebow's better, but in that moment, on that Sunday, he was. But when I look at Baltimore, here's the one thing I will say. I always do my NFL predictions, and I never make anybody like undefeated or 0-16. I mean, I did a couple years ago. But even a good team, I think winning 12 games in the NFL is really hard. Baltimore is the first team, the more I think about it, Baltimore is the first team maybe I've ever thought that I'm starting to think they're going to go 16-0. And it's not ridiculous. First of all, Kansas City plays in a division with the Chargers. They have one of the top three rosters in the NFL. Denver's highly explosive on offense. They also are off a Super Bowl win. Kansas City have a little bit of a September hangover. Also, Kansas City has to go to Baltimore for Monday Night Football. Good luck. To the Saints. To Tom Brady in Tampa late in the year when Tom should have his act together. At Buffalo in October when it gets cold and windy and brings down both offenses. If you look at Baltimore, they bring back everybody. They upgraded their secondary. They now have the best secondary, the best running game in the NFL. Their toughest road game's at Philadelphia. They could take a bus there. They don't go west. Seattle next year travels 30,000 miles. Baltimore travels 6,000 miles. They're in a division where Cincinnati's got a rookie quarterback, Cleveland's got a rookie coach, and Pittsburgh has an old quarterback off an injury who looks like he hasn't shaved in years. I don't know what to make of the Steelers. I do know what to make of Cincinnati. They're bad. And as far as Cleveland goes, none of us know. But they got a rookie head coach and a rookie system in a year of pandemic when there's no OTAs and an abridged preseason. Baltimore doesn't travel. Baltimore's got continuity. Baltimore's schedule. The two teams on Baltimore's schedule that have what I would call equal talent or close, Cleveland and Kansas City. They host Kansas City, and Kansas City beat them last year, so they got a chip on their shoulder. And Cleveland beat them last year, too, and shocked them, and they've got a chip on their shoulder in the opener against Cleveland. Baltimore is a rare team for me. I think it is very possible they steamroll Cleveland early and they just start rolling and they don't slow down. And even as good as Kansas City is, they're going to have three or four missteps. As good as those great New England teams are, I never thought they'd go undefeated. Undefeated to me just doesn't make sense. I think the Niners next year are going to lose, you know, half a dozen games to four or five games. I think Baltimore, no continuity, no OTAs, chip on their shoulder, schedule perfect. We may be looking at a 16-0 football team, and I don't think it's crazy. They got the best O-line in the league, arguably. Best running game, best secondary, easiest schedule, and a quarterback who was great last year and appears to be getting better.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
He's a Super Bowl champ, 13 NFL seasons, friend of mine, three Pro Bowls, always got opinions. Seth Joyner is now joining me from his home in Arizona via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Seth Joyner. You know, it's interesting. Jimmy Garoppolo said yesterday, he said, listen, man, if I was going to get traded, It didn't faze me. It's the NFL. And part of me thinks, man, if I was going to get traded from Fox Sports for another sportscaster and I was in my prime, I don't think I'd sleep as well tonight. But I guess as a pro athlete, it's just built into your guy's psyche. I mean, would it bother you in your prime if you were on the trading block?
Hey, listen, for $100 million, they can trade him wherever they want to trade him. He's still going to get his money. I think as players, you know, we're sensitive to things like that because everybody wants to be wanted wherever they are. But if you play in the NFL long enough, you know that the end is coming sooner or later. So it's a smart way for him to approach this thing, especially with all the information that was swirling about how interested the 49ers were in Tom Brady.
Speaking of Brady, it's interesting. So you make your mark with the Eagles, and then you had a couple other stops. And Byron Leftwich said, Seth, he goes, for Tom, it's not about figuring the offense out. But when you live in a town and you have a drive to work and you have the same protocol and you do it for 20 years, and then all of a sudden you go to loosey-goosey Tampa and cocktails at 5 with Bruce Arians, and the players they're not used to Tom's intensity. And that it's the day-to-day stuff. You know, Philadelphia is intense. That doesn't mean everybody's like Philadelphia, where they expect you to win and they yell at you and there's talk radio and they're demanding. And then you go to Tampa and all of a sudden it's like, hey, let's go fishing. It's 4:30. Do you think Brady will struggle a little bit going from the most intense NFL system, which he helped create, to kind of a laid-back, chill, hangout, hope we win market and city and franchise?
No, because I think that, you know, you got to evaluate why you play the game. Why are you playing football? If you're not playing to win championships, and here you have a guy in Tom Brady who's been to 9 Super Bowls and won 3. And at 42 years old, the fire is still burning to win more and to prove that he was just as important in winning those Super Bowls in New England as Bill Belichick is, okay? Now, I know Bruce Arians. He is a intense guy, okay? And he's gonna implement that mentality on his football team. I also know that Todd Bowles is gonna put a phenomenal product defensively. He's building towards it on that field. Now, listen, if those players and the people of Tampa Bay can't get behind that intensity, with all the lackluster play that they've had, with the exception of the one Super Bowl that they won, then they need to sell the franchise and move on. Because at the end of the day, you're there as a football player to win championships. You know, and if the rest of the guys can't buy into that, then I promise you, Bruce will get rid of the ones that can't, and everybody else will fall in line.
So I am in the camp with Lamar Jackson, that he's a hard worker. He's a unique, dynamic athlete. When Zion Williamson came into the NBA, I just kept saying, he doesn't look like anybody else. It's going to work. And it did. Lamar Jackson just doesn't play like anybody else. It's going to work. But there is also a camp that thinks, okay, this runaround stuff has limitations. Kaepernick had 2 or 3 years, and then the league kind of figured it out. What camp are you in with Lamar Jackson going forward?
I do think he's a unique skill set, but I also believe I've always been of the opinion that, you know, when you have a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, you know physically that he's gifted and you see what he can do when he has the football in his hand. I would rather see the total development of a quarterback like him and then have him use these skill sets when necessary. When you look at Patrick Mahomes can do some of this stuff. He's not as athletic as Lamar Jackson, but he is a complete quarterback who plays the game from the pocket first and then uses his athleticism only when he has to. And I would love to see that happen with Lamar Jackson. This is the problem that I have with these offensive coordinators that formulate or develop an offense strictly for a quarterback. Because defenses, at some point, they're going to figure it out. They're going to figure out how to stop him from running all over the place. He's going to take some blows. So for longevity purposes, I would love to see them develop him and then coach him to use his abilities only when necessary out of the pocket.
So one thing you and I think, agree with, and we have a lot of things we don't agree on, but I think Carson Wentz is special. And I think throughout the course of this last 3 months, I've seen about seven polls. And they've all got Carson Wentz as the 11th best quarterback and the 9th best and the second most true talent in this division, in this conference. And as somebody who does Eagles games, is in the city regularly, there was this first impressions matter. He got hurt early. Foles won a Super Bowl without him. There are stories that not everybody liked him. What's the true Carson Wentz you hear about and defend from the players?
Well, let me preface this, you know, with, listen, I cover the team. I play for the team. But you know me, Colin, I speak, you know, straight from the hip. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. If I didn't think Carson Wentz was a great quarterback, I'd say it. And I have no bits about that. I think that he's had to grow up. And I thought that towards the end of last season, we saw him grow up right before our eyes. Because I believe that, you know, he had some young guys around him that just wanted to play. They didn't care who was getting the ball. They didn't care how many targets were coming to him. They didn't care about any of that stuff. They saw an opportunity to get on the field and make some plays and make a name for themselves. And they looked to him for leadership. And he stepped into his rightful place as leader on that football team. Now, he has to continue to do that. A lot of people are down on him because of injury. Let's talk about the injury. How many ACL injuries do, you know, happens on a yearly basis? You know, let's not forget the kid not only tore his ACL, but he tore his LCL too. And then he rushed him back the following year, in my opinion, and he fractures the back. In my opinion, that's about them rushing him back too fast, because it's one thing to be physically ready. It's another thing to be psychologically ready. And then you're making these compensations and then he gets injured, not because somebody hit him. He's just, you know what, I got something's going on in my back. You know, they check it out. They, you know, nothing on the scan. And then all of a sudden they go back and they do another one. And now you can see the calcification and you know that, you know what, if you see the calcification, it's already healing. Okay. Then you fast forward to last season, gets through 16 games, gets to the playoffs. Jadeveon Clowney hits him in the back of the head. What are you going to do about a concussion? Because once you go in the blue tent, they take your helmet, your day is over. It's not the NFL that I once played in. But when you watch this kid play, you see that when he has the weapons and he's fully engaged and he's healthy, he's a top-flight quarterback. I don't care what anybody says. And I saw that same list that he's the top 50 players and he's not even on the list. Name me 20 to 25 players that are better than Carson Wentz in a quarterback-driven league.
Yeah, there aren't. There are not. Finally, I haven't gotten your opinion on, I know it happened a while back, Jordan Love drafted over Aaron Rodgers. Now, I believe if Aaron and Russell Wilson have the same years they had last year, identical years, Russell's now tied with Aaron for the greatest passer rating in league history. I think this moment today, Russell today is better than Aaron. I don't think that 4 years ago. Aaron's last great passer rating year was 6 years ago. His two best, 2011, 2012. I think we've seen the best of Aaron, though I think he's still unbelievably talented. But when they drafted Jordan Love, I haven't gotten your take on this yet. My takeaway is there are things behind the scenes that wear people out. Aaron wears people out. We've had family members. We've had Martellus Bennett recently. We've had Jeff Saturday. We've had Greg Jennings, people I know and respect. Today, where is Aaron Rodgers in your eyes in the NFL as a quarterback? Where does he stand to you?
I still think that Aaron Rodgers is an elite level quarterback. You know, did he get a little too big for his britches, you know, with Mike McCarthy? Probably. You know, that relationship deteriorated. Matt LaFleur comes in and he implements a run first offense, something that Aaron Rodgers has never had to deal with, because, you know, that offense has been predicated on what Aaron Rodgers does in the pass game. I think with the right weapons around him, and I get it, you know, Russell Wilson has been phenomenal. But let's not get it twisted. At the end of the day, that first Super Bowl that the Seattle Seahawks won was because of the Legion of Boom. It wasn't because of Russell Wilson. It was in spite of Russell Wilson, in my opinion. Now, they get him back there, and they make the wrong call, and he throws the interception. But when you look at what Russell Wilson does, he's a different animal. And that team is built differently. And now when you look at the Green Bay Packers, they're kind of building that this team the way that the Seattle Seahawks are built. And that's something that Aaron's not used to. He's used to shouldering all the, you know, all the weight as far as the football team. They're trying to run the ball first, and then they're building the defense that's been phenomenal last year. So, yeah, Rodgers, you know, Aaron Rodgers is, you know, he didn't have the numbers he had last year, so that's going to make everybody pause. And he's a little teed off because, you know, they went and they drafted a quarterback rather than going to get him some skill positions, at some skill guys at wide receiver. But in my opinion, Aaron Rodgers is still Aaron Rodgers. If you put all the pieces around him, you give him an offensive line that protects him, and you give him some weapons that he can throw the ball to, he can still be just as dangerous as he's always been.
It's a good scene. You're going to play golf today, by the way?
I haven't yet, but, you know, after I get done with speak, you can best believe I'm getting out there in that 100 and 102 weather to play.
Seth does not care about heat. He is playing golf every day in Tempe, Arizona. Good seeing you, bud.